The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp launched his reelection campaign the other day, saying he's running scared but hard. Did that pronouncement bolster faith in the type of leader the GOP needs to mobilize and unify? That's where we start things off on this week's edition of Political Breakfast. I'm Lisa Ram. Also here is Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democrat strategist Darren Johnson. It's great to be with you two.
Thanks, Lisa, and welcome
to you.
The podcast. We're thrilled to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. You know, Dennis says, he says he's retiring, although he will be contributing from time to time, but he was kind enough to trust me with the podcast. And what an exciting time it is in politics to be here. So I'm excited. So thank you, both of you. Let's get to the main topic. Governor Kemp launching his reelection campaign. You know, he said a lot of things that day, but I was a little taken aback with the word scared, running scared and hard. Brian, let's begin with you. Does that sound like a leader who can reassemble the once dominating GOP party?
Well, I think what he's saying there, speaking figuratively, to say, I'm going to run like I'm 20 points down, which is something that you hear a lot as, you know, people are getting to the end of a campaign. And even if polling shows them a little bit ahead, they'll say, you know, I'm not going to rest on my laurels. I'm going to, you know, run through the tape, et cetera. I think that's what he's saying. But look, if he wasn't worried, if he was not a little bit stressed about the atmosphere, then he wouldn't be paying attention. I mean, it is a tough primary potential. Actually, there's a guy out of Washington, Georgia, who met with Trump this weekend at the CPAC event in Texas. And, you know, Trump obviously has been, you know, trying to get this guy to run against Kemp. That would be a serious threat. And of course, no matter who the nominee is, it's a different day. My buddy here, Theron, thinks it's a blue state. I think it's a purple state. But what we know is it's not a solidly red state. And so Republicans have to run scared or run like they're behind, because it's a 50-50 state, and you got to have the right environment, not just do everything right. You got to have things go your way in Georgia today to win.
I don't know, Theron, did you read a little more into that, especially when you have the likes of, you know, Stacey Abrams waiting in the wings, so to speak? Did you read a little more into his statement there?
Well, first, Lisa, I want to welcome you to the podcast as well. I know Brian mentioned it earlier. We're so excited to have you as our new host, and I'm sure you'll do your best to keep us in line.
I will try. But thank you so much for the warm welcome.
So, Lisa, I agree with you and I agree with Brian. Let me start with you first, because ladies first always. And so I think for me, you know, from knowing Governor Kemp for a long time, you know, I think he realized that he had to get out here sooner than later and really let people know, number one, I'm running. And it was right around the time where he announced that he has roughly about $9 million on hand to go face a Republican challenger or challengers, and definitely either Stacey Abrams or a, you know, another Democrat in the general. And I think if you really sort of also think about it, I mean, he had to really probably start his campaign for reelection a little sooner than he thought, because no way in the world did he think that the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, who in the beginning of his presidency did everything he possibly could to work with this president. But now that now Governor Kemp is now going to be facing maybe one or two candidates that are going to be supported by the former president, because the former president feels like Governor Kemp did not do enough to stop the steal. But I do have to agree with Brian really quickly, is that it is sort of a figuratively sort of speech that we use in campaigns. You always say you want to run like you're 20 points behind. You definitely say you want to run scared. And then that way they're if you do that, there's no surprises. But ultimately, I think the governor is definitely well positioned, but he definitely has got to be worried about having two possible challengers who are going to have the former president's support, at least one of them, at least.
Okay, yes, you have all the political jargon, but if I'm an undecided voter, sitting back, listening to all of this, knowing the state of the GOP, what's the takeaway from this pronouncement? What is he really saying?
Well, Lisa, it's not the word I would have used, right? I mean, this is what I do for a living. This is the lane that I'm in, much more so than what Theron does. Theron does more of the big picture stuff with campaigns. But for me, I choose words carefully, and that's not the word I would have used. I would have used, we're going to run like we're behind the entire time. And, you know, I think they need to have a little bit of swagger, but not too much. You know, I think some of that comes naturally with an incumbent governor. But, you know, I think if I'm an undecided voter, here's my takeaway, Lisa, to get to the bottom line of what you're asking. My takeaway is my vote counts because this is going to be razor thin. Neither side has it in the bag. And where I come down on this could be heavily influential on who the next governor of Georgia is.
If there is a fear factor, Theron, State Representative, former State Representative Vernon Jones, what would he rank on a scale of 1 to 10?
Because it's Vernon, you got to give him above 5, right? Because we better get our popcorn ready. He's definitely going to have some theatrics. But I would say it's probably a 6.5, Lisa, because one, as I mentioned before, you know, Governor Kemp has done a phenomenal job of raising money and raising money early. You know, I think Vernon Jones had a concert this week in Georgia, a country singer, I forget his name, I'm sure Brian knows, and I know
Travis Tritt. It's Travis Tritt, man.
Travis Tritt, yeah. And you know, he had the former mayor of New York and Trump lawyer, who I think has been disbarred or banned from D.C., Rudy Giuliani, in Georgia, raising money for him. But Lisa, back to your question about undecided voters. Look, if you're a voter and you voted for Stacey Abrams in 2018, you got about a 95% chance that you're going to vote for her again. And vice versa, if you're a Republican voter and you voted for Brian Kemp, you have about a 95% chance. And what is the factor on both sides? Well, if you voted for Brian Kemp, but you were a staunch supporter of President Trump, President Trump's sort of support, or lack thereof, or not supporting Governor Kemp may weigh with some of these sort of undecided voters. And also some voters who voted for the governor before. But if you voted for Stacey Abrams the first time, I don't think she's giving you a legislative reason, maybe some PR reasons not to vote for her again. So to Brian's point, the race is really going to be made up with these undecided voters. And I think it's going to play heavily on how the governor handled the vaccine rollout and what did he do to try to save lives in the state of Georgia around COVID-19.
Well, you know, where Theron is completely right about Vernon is get your popcorn, because there's always going to be great theater around Vernon Jones. And I love political theater. It's part of why I'm in this business, really, because I don't care too much about policy, but I love the political theater. And he provides a lot of it. And I think where he is dangerous for Kemp is he's out there constantly reminding people at a time when Trump doesn't have Twitter, he doesn't have a megaphone that is what it used to be. He still has a big voice, right, but it's different. And he's reminding people that Trump doesn't like Kemp all the time. And that's his entire reason for being. That is the force behind his campaign. And, you know, if he exposes a weakness, this is the danger. If he exposes a weakness, it opens the door to a stronger challenger coming in, and then we're cooking with gas. Then we have some trouble on the horizon.
So Vernon Jones, both of you, more an entertainer and not a politician?
I mean, the guy's had a credible, like, sexual assault. I mean, I don't know that I can get into that. I don't want to get in trouble legally, but he's had credible charges against him through the years that would be troubling. There's a mountain of oppo to use against him. And I'm sure Theron, who's got deep roots in DeKalb politics, has some strong thoughts on it as well.
Well, Lisa, that's exactly where I want to go. We're going to be, you know, fair and balanced on this podcast. Listen, right. Vernon Jones became the first African-American CEO of DeKalb County. And for our listeners, you guys all remember that was the county that I believe push Joe Biden, definitely John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock over the top to be victorious. And so when he was the CEO of DeKalb County, look, a lot of folks felt like he did some really good stuff. And I think, if, you know, many people you talk to, they still support Vernon Jones. But I think it was when he got to the legislature and he started, you know, getting into a lot of controversial things. And then more importantly, he switched parties. And so that ultimately probably won't hurt him in a Republican primary. But as Brian indicated, he definitely has had some questionable, incredible allegations made against him in the past. But at the start of his career, I think he was a pretty reputable politician.
Yeah, and as you noted, he still has quite the following. So he certainly is one to watch, you know.
I've never seen anybody that Democrats hate more than Vernon Jones. I talk about Democrat friends, and they're being very nice about him, but they hated him before he switched parties. So it's really interesting. My favorite Vernon Jones messaging right now in the campaign is, as a Democrat in the House, he voted against the heartbeat bill in Brian Kemp's first session as governor and, you know, gave a speech about why it was a terrible bill and a very pro-choice speech. And now he says he voted no because it didn't go far enough. It is one of the most hilarious messaging bits in the entire campaign.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, they talk about Vernon Jones. So he's going to be quite the distraction then.
He's always a distraction. Yeah. And that's where
some things never change. Okay.
You know, I don't think if it's just him, he's not a danger to Brian Kemp, right? He's just not. But like I said, if he exposes weakness, that changes the game.
Well, let's really quickly, if you don't mind, Lisa, let's just talk about why Brian probably feels that he's not a threat. And that is because we've seen in Georgia, we've never had an African-American Republican candidate nominee on the Republican side. Now you've had people like Melvin Everson, who was a statewide constitutional elected official who was Republican. And so what we really want to wait and see is, will these predominantly white Trump supporters, and I say predominantly because there are also some African-American men in Georgia who vote Republican, will they vote for Vernon Jones over Brian Kemp? And I think secondly, If former President Trump comes to this state and goes in some key places around the state and really campaigns actively and physically for Vernon Jones, I still think Brian Kemp wins the primary, but I think it'll be closer than we think.
Now, one thing Governor Kemp did do was acknowledge how united the Democratic Party is. But what he didn't say is that he has plans to reunite the GOP. Does the average person care that he doesn't seem to have a step-by-step process to accomplish this? And is it his job? You know, it's the lieutenant governor's mission right now to do just that. So is that something that the governor even needs to worry about and build into his platform?
Yeah, I mean, voters aren't always open to an argument about electoral success. Like, you, the voter, must do this if your party is going to win. They don't respond to that. They don't, like in primaries, you don't move the needle with, I'm the best general election candidate. I kind of wish it did because I'm pragmatic in that way myself. But, you know, the message in the Democrat Party primary is, I'm the most liberal, you know, in the Republican primary is, I'm the most conservative. And that's the stuff that moves the needle. But what Brian is saying is true. If the Republicans aren't unified by October of 2022, then it's going to be a bloodbath here in Georgia for the Republicans. I mean, the Republicans have to be united. We're 50-50. And when he says the Democrats are united, and I would love for Theron to push back on me on this, but it's because they have a dear leader. And as long as dear leader is the nominee, then they're going to be behind her. But if she doesn't run, which, I mean, where is she? What's she going to do? I mean, nobody's hearing from her about her plans. We hear from her all the time. Otherwise, if she doesn't run, it's going to be utter chaos on the Democrat side. And a huge divide is going to erupt over there, just like what we have on our side. So Democrats aren't out of the dark yet.
Theron, discuss strategy here. When might we hear from Stacey Abrams? It's, you know, the time is starting to tick away.
You know, Lisa, I'm never going to position myself on this podcast to say that I talk to the former, Democratic leader in the House regularly. I do talk to folks who are close to her. And I'm hearing, you know, sort of a mixed reaction. I'm hearing people who are close to her and close to the situation and saying, hey, absolutely, she's going to run. You know, she's just continuing to work on the many organizations that she's working on. But then I hear from people who are not as close to her, to be fair, who make a lot of different speculations that she may not run because I hear that, you know, maybe she's making too much money or, quite frankly, she's thinking about running for president. And so I would say this, we are united, and Governor Kemp was absolutely right, because one, we got two U.S. senators who are Democrat, and, you know, whether Stacey Abrams runs, I disagree with Brian. I think I can name you two or three people who would step up right away and be able to be credible and would be able to compete in a Democratic primary. And so this is the most united Democrats have been in a very, very long time. I would say this is the most united we've been, quite frankly, since 2002 when War Barnes lost the governor's mansion. And so ultimately, we're in a better position in this state because, one, I think we have the better candidates up and down the ballot. And then, two, I think we have proven, Lisa, that we can raise money and we know how to spend it. And, you know, and let's not forget, every time somebody's moving into state, majority of these folks who are moving into Georgia are coming from Democratic areas or Democratic states. And so we've got to do our due diligence to educate them and properly get them registered to vote and mobilize them. And I think ultimately we'll pick up big victories in 2022.
Of course, mostly, you know, another important race is making news, and a former Georgia governor, Nathan Deal, endorsed Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black to run against Raphael Warnock in 2022. He's the best known Republican candidate at this point, but is he the best challenger?
Well, you know, you mentioned Gary Black, and Theron was just saying that there were no, you know, credible Black candidates on the Republican side, and this proves him wrong. Governor Deal endorsing Gary Black actually.
I just called that, by the way, bro. It took Lisa a few seconds.
You guys are just, y'all are leaving me hanging, man.
I got you.
Do we want to go there? Is it safe? I don't know. But we got it.
Governor Deal, who always did a lot of Black outreach, endorsed Gary Black. And look, it makes sense. It was a surprise to me. And obviously, I'm a Deal person. I was his spokesperson for a long time, communicate with him a good bit. So I didn't know it was coming Monday morning when it hit, but it makes sense. You know, Gary was ag commissioner for all 8 years that Deal was governor. The relationship goes back 20 years. They were on the campaign trail together last year for Doug Collins in that Senate race. So there's a friendship there, and, mm-hmm. and that's what you're reflecting. And, you know, but I will say one thing that's interesting is I am on a different Senate campaign that I need to disclose that, but a lot of the Gainesville people who are with Deal or his major donors are actually with other candidates.
Well, Theron, you know, it pays to be picky. And I imagine the Republican Party is going to be extremely picky about what candidate should enter that race. How picky? And is Herschel Walker, former UGA football star, the answer?
You know, I was actually in Nashville this week attending the Southern Leadership Conference. It's where all the state legislators from the South come together. And I was in a room, Lisa, with a majority of Republicans. We did have some Democrats in that room, and it's growing and growing each year. And when I had an opportunity to talk to my friend, and I still call him my friend, even though he thinks it hurts me, but I had a chance to talk to Speaker David Ralston a little bit. And one thing he said to me I thought was so interesting about Herschel Walker, and he's a UGA alum, just like Brian, and I grew up in Athens, and he didn't have anything bad to say about him. You know, he definitely was very respectful and felt like, you know, based on some information that he's received, that folks are saying that he's definitely going to run. But I think that Brian may agree or disagree with me is really becoming a candidate for the first time and going statewide for a U.S. Senate race, Lisa, is pretty bold. I mean, we're talking about it's people who have been practicing for years on message discipline, knowing how to really work a room. And And I don't really know how deep he's going to be able to go on policy discussions, right?
And he hasn't lived here in years, correct? I don't think he's Absolutely. Lived here in a long time.
I mean, first and foremost, I would tell Herschel before he starts running, and, you know, everybody's saying run, Herschel, run. I would say move, Herschel, move. Like move. You know, consistently first. And then the other thing is, I really hope this, and again, this is why I want us to just continue to have these conversations. You know, I really hope that former President Trump is not really putting Herschel Walker out there, probably knowing that he's not at a point emotionally or mentally to really embark upon a heavily contested primary. Well, he will be the target. And then lastly, I don't see the translation from going from being a, you know, Hall of Famer, Heisman Trophy winner at University of Georgia, to be able to go up against people like Gary Black, who, by the way, Lisa, I said good things about on this podcast a few weeks ago. So it's good to know that me and Governor Deal actually think alike a little bit as far as how we see qualities in the candidates. But I'm waiting for the day for the Republican Party of Georgia to vote a nominee and he or she who is African-American or Hispanic. I just don't know if that's going to happen.
With Walker. Well, Brian, though, you know, money talks, or does it? You know, Raphael Warnock, he's raised lots of money in the millions, I think 7 million to be exact.
Yeah, he's obviously had his nose to the grindstone these few months he's been in office. And, you know, he is halfway to where a campaign just 5, 6, 10 years ago in Georgia would have been fully funded. I mean, the governor's race in 2014, the spending was around $15 million. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's almost there already. And he's doing it at much lower contribution limits than what you have on a statewide race, where you can give, you know, way more money individually than you can for a federal race. So, but the thing is, it doesn't matter that much because money won't be an object. The outside money is going to flow in. He has no danger of having a primary, which is kind of where you would need a war chest. And in general, the money will flow in for both sides. You know, during the runoff, we had, what, $800 million spent? An unfathomable amount of money. What a presidential race nationwide used their cost, you know? And that is becoming the norm in Georgia. So that's a great start, but I don't know that it matters because both sides are going to be just swimming in money.
We want to thank you for joining us for this edition of Political Breakfast. We're going to take a short break and return in a moment.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
All right, welcome back. You know, we've talked about Governor Brian Kemp relaunching his reelection campaign. And then we talked about the all-important U.S. Senate race involving Raphael Warnock. And now this race has piqued my interest and others. Two candidates in their 30s are hoping to unseat Lucy McBeth in the 6th District. How important is this, knowing that young voters played such a crucial role in the presidential election?
Well, I think you're onto something, Lisa. And it's no secret that the Georgia GOP, because Brian has been screaming it in this podcast for now, I would say 4 years, because that was about two and a half years there where he was sort of coasting. And then when he started seeing the demographic shift and started seeing that we got more organized and we were continuing to diversify our party. So now with you having two young people, Jake Evans and Megan Hansen, Megan Hansen being a former state representative, and also Jake Evans being a former chair of the Georgia Ethics Commission, and his father, Randy Evans, was a longtime respected lawyer at Kendall Long and Aldridge and then Denton, and then went on to be a U.S. ambassador under President Trump. So I think, you know, you're going to have a really, really tough battle between those two, and you may have someone else that may jump in that race. But to your point about the youth vote, Lisa, is the one thing that I try to make sure that I weave into my narrative of how Democrats were able to win in 2020. And yes, we had record number turnout as far as African-Americans, particularly African-American women. We definitely had increases in Asian voters and with Hispanic voters. But the untold story was how we were able to mobilize young people. So I'll be very interested to see how these two young candidates would do with the young Republican voters in the Georgia 6th district.
Brian, you kind of like this twist with the, you know, these young candidates possibly invigorating the youth vote. Who do you favor, Jake Evans or Representative Megan Hansen? Do you think, you know, of the two, who might have a better shot of unseating Lucy McBath?
Well, Jake Evans is my client, so it would be unethical to weigh in there. But
Brian is loaded.
Okay, note of disclosure. Okay. Note of disclosure there. Okay, great.
But you know, I can speak in general terms here that it's reassuring to see young people, particularly young people who have pretty impressive resumes, stepping forward as Republicans to sort of bring in a new generation. You know, Theron and his buddies would have you believe that Republicans are just crotchety old white guys, and that's, you know, probably got some statistical truth to it, but there's going to have to be some new blood, some regeneration, and Evans and Megan Hansen represent that for the party. And, you know, there's a chance. Here's the important thing here. We are redistricting this fall. We don't know exactly when just yet because we're waiting on the census numbers still, but the Republican General Assembly is going to make either the 6th or the 7th, which is Gwinnett and Forsyth, Republican. Both are represented by Democrats today. So we are still in a wait-and-see game to see when the district is drawn, which one's going to be Republican.
Lisa, if you don't mind, I'm going to have to jump in here. I know we're getting ready to go to another subject, but I have to say something about Congresswoman Lucy McBath for two reasons. One, I'm a huge supporter of her and her, you know, work in Congress. And two, she listens to this podcast. So while we're, you know, while we're talking about the Republican candidates, I will tell you that Congresswoman McBath, I know this personally, is working very hard in her district. She's also putting up some really respectful numbers in fundraising. And I know that personally because she calls me often asking for money. And so I think she's going to be very, very difficult to beat, and she'll be well positioned.
Lastly, before we get out of here, we have to talk about the All-Star Game and how it's launched Georgia's new voting law into the spotlight again. There was also a lot of legal wrangling taking place this past week in the Justice Department, a federal judge in Georgia, U.S. District Court. What does it all mean? What does it all mean, you know, as we sort through all of this? Is there an end in sight? Brian?
Oh, Theron. This is where Lisa's going to learn that she's begun dancing on the topic that gets me fired up more than any other. And
I hear you.
I the Democrats talk about the big lie, and I have been very clear about my feelings on the election of 2020. But what the Democrats have done in response is their own big lie, the idea that these election laws are suppressing anyone's votes. There's no statistical evidence to back that up. And when they didn't have facts to use, they began to go to the extreme examples and just making stuff up. Like, you can't have water in line and people are going to die of dehydration. While you would think that multiple people had died of dehydration in 2020, the way that they responded to that part of the law. And it's all nonsense. You can have a water cooler 150 feet away. You can have a food truck right there. It's fine. They had to make stuff up in order to make an argument against these laws. And the Arizona case went to the Supreme Court on similar grounds. It lost. The cases against Georgia are going to lose. The DOJ went to the court saying that this was intended to keep Black people. They were very specific. This isn't me, Lisa. This is them. Intended to keep Black people from voting. That is the highest legal standard that must be met, and one that's going to be impossible for them to meet. But I want to add on a personal note, it's not true. I promise you, and judge Georgia by this, I promise you that in 2022, the Black turnout will be the same as 2020. There's not going to be some drop off because the rhetoric about this law is false.
Darren, what are your thoughts?
So Lisa, let me just first and foremost, let me just push back on this, because what I've been hearing a lot lately from Republicans, and God, I heard it all week from some of our Republican colleagues, is that, oh, the vote total is just going to be so high in 2022. And it's almost like, Lisa, like they're taking credit for it. Well, guess what, guys? The reason why more Black people are going to vote in this state is because we have been working for two decades. When I say we, and many campaign officials like myself, campaign managers, groups like the NAACP and Metro Atlanta Urban League and Fight and others have been registering more Black people to vote. But here's the truth of the matter, Lisa, and this is what the Republicans do not want to admit. The fact is that COVID came, right? And they said, you know what? Let's give everyone more access to vote. Let's create drop boxes. Let's extend hours at the voting booth. Let's, you know, sort of give everybody a absentee ballot application. And what happened is, Lisa, at a time where Republicans, because they did all that, right? We didn't do that because we weren't in the control to do it. State officials, particularly the Secretary of State, did all those things. And yes, it was for the emergency purposes. But what they did is that they actually made it more accessible for people to vote. And that's what they know, Lisa. They knew that they could not go into 2021 or 2022 with the same laws and the same voting procedures that they created. So what did they do? They had to take away things. They took away the drop boxes. They made it more restrictive for you to vote in that regards. Brian is right. You can still have water in line, but now the election officials have to bring the water. But that was something that, quite frankly, for me, that was really unnecessary, because what they're inferring is that Democrats are in line basically telling people who to vote for by wearing T-shirts and passing out pamphlets. Most voters have already made up in their mind they're going to vote for. So I want to push back on this notion that Republicans are trying to start messaging in 2021 that the numbers are going to be high. Than higher than they were before, and like they have something to do with it. No, they're going to be higher because we took advantage of the rules that the Republicans put forth during COVID. We had a better plan to activate our voters, and we had better candidates. And so, of course, the numbers are going to be as high because people are going to want to go and exercise their right to vote, and we have educated them more on how to do it. Last thing I'll say is this. It's very hard to explain the legal process and where we are right now, Lisa, on this podcast. I know we don't have that much time.
Yeah. I think it's all over the place. It feels like it's all over the place.
It is all over the place. And what I'm telling Democrats is this, and this is going to probably shock Brian. I think we need to spend a little less time. You know, you still got to talk about it, right? You got to talk about how this voting bill definitely is a hit against democracy. It is an attack on democracy. It's an attack on Black and brown voters. It's an attack on rural voters. It's an attack on disabled voters, right? By making it harder for them to utilize early voting in drop boxes. But the fact of the matter is, what we got to do as Democrats, Lisa, we got to stop talking about what happened. If we know that there's 300,000 people out there roughly right now in the state of Georgia who don't have an ID, then guess what we need to be doing, Lisa? Let's figure out who those people are, where they are, use this money that Stacey Abrams, Warnock, Ossoff, McBath, Dakima Williams, the party, Michael Thurman, let's put our money together. Keisha Lance Bottoms, she's not running again. Maybe one thing she can do is put some of that money that she still has in her campaign, and let's go identify those voters, get them an ID, make sure they understand how to properly retain the ID up into the voting time, and then let them turn out. And I believe that if we do that, we'll be victorious again, because we know that if you give people the opportunity to fair and properly vote in a secure election, they will turn out. And we've seen that it usually, and based on the elections from last year, will benefit Democrats.
Yeah, and Stacey Abrams may be ahead of the game. The Fair Fight Group has about $20 million to spend. Brian and
Lisa, they don't have to spend their $20 million on getting people free IDs.
Right. They can support candidates. Yeah.
Because they're free IDs.
Yeah. Well, you don't have an ID. I'm not saying that we go buy people IDs. I'm saying that you identify through the money to identify where they are. I mean, AJC did a really good article, I thought, sort of giving us a number. So let's use the technology. Educate those folks, give them the means to go and get these free IDs, and then make sure they retain them and know how to use them when it comes to voting. And I believe, to me, that's where our strategy needs to shift too. We've spent too much time talking on what the Republicans did. We need to start thinking about the future.
And Brian, we'll give you the last word before we wrap up here today.
Well, statistically, Black voters, white voters, brown voters, any ethnic group you want to think about, they have IDs. It is a essential quality of the modern world. You got to have it, and everyone does. And, you know, the idea that there's this great disparity between white voters and black voters on who has ID is not backed up by empirical evidence. And that's why this case is going to fail in court.
Brian, Theron, thank you as always. This wraps up this week's edition of Political Breakfast. Everyone have a good week.
Thank you, Lisa, and welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, and great season to the Atlanta Hawks.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.